Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is James Thurber, the University Distinguished Professor of Government and founder and former director of the Center for Congressional and Presidential Studies at American University in Washington, D.C. He's the author of numerous books and more than 80 articles and chapters on Congress, interest groups and lobbying, and campaign and elections. And his latest book is Congress and Diaspora Politics, The Influence of Ethnic and Foreign Lobbying. Welcome to Background Briefing, James Thurber.
Good to be here.
And shortly after Citizens United became law, President Obama, at a State of the Union address, castigated the ruling and said it would lead to the influx of foreign money in our elections. And the representative of the Supreme Court present there was Samuel Alito, and he mouthed, "Not true." But in retrospect, who was right, Obama or Alito?
Alito, in the sense that it's illegal for any foreigner, foreign corporation or foreign government to contribute to campaign finance in the United States. But there's lots of money, hundreds of millions of dollars being paid to lobby for those foreign interests. And in many cases, people are not registering to do that lobbying. And that's part of the democratic process here. They just can't be involved in campaigns. Now, we're seeing that that Russia looks like has intervened with respect to social media. And if some people have been hired to represent an interest, there may be a case where people are running advertisements and other things, not for candidates, but for general causes that influence the way people think about things.
Well, Paul Manafort, I think, has opened a whole can of worms about K Street and shedding a light on the kind of bipartisan nature of the corruption there, which...
By K Street, you mean Kiev Street?
So do you think that the Foreign Agents Registration Act will be bolstered? I mean, if you just look at the case of Paul Manafort, back in 1986, he had more than 10 foreign governments he was lobbying for as clients, and he was running their media campaigns in the United States. He was meeting with White House, State Department, and congressional officials on behalf of these. And by the way, these were pretty much all very unsavory regimes. He apparently was told that he had to disclose these activities to the Justice Department under the Foreign Agents Registration Act. And 32 years later, he is now, well, he was facing charges in the D.C. courts. The day before he was jury selection, he caved and made a deal. But he was going to be charged under FARA for his activities with Ukraine. So obviously the warning back in 1986 didn't do anything and didn't stop him from lobbying all those decades.
He knew better. In fact, when it was Black and Manafort, 25 years ago, Mr. Black, well-respected in town, said that they were very careful about registering when they were representing a foreign nation or a foreign political party or leader. He knew better. He just ignored it and went on. And one of the reasons he ignored it is that norm in Washington, D.C. at that time, and right up until he was indicted, Flynn was indicted, Gates was indicted on these issues, people just ignored it in Washington. Like in the movie Casablanca, and they come in and there's gambling going on, I'm shocked. Well, there's lots of people in Washington, D.C. that are now registering ex post facto for foreign clients because they can get in trouble. This is a very serious law. It's a felony. You can go to jail. And it also is a law that reveals a great deal about what you're doing for the foreign client because you have to reveal the entire contract. So it's not just making contacts like in the Lobby Disclosure Act. It's also whether you're doing grassroots, top roots, coalition building, advertising, social media, the whole thing. So a lot of people are vulnerable if they're U.S. citizens representing these foreign interests.
So, James, are you saying then that Robert Mueller is reviving FARA? Because he's already nailed Rick Gates on FARA, Michael Flynn on Farah, Sam Patton, the Republican lobbyist to work with Manafort, and the 13 Russians that he charged and other companies, three Russian companies, for illegally using social media to influence the 2016 elections. They also were nailed under Farah. And Farah goes back to 1938 when it was used to go after pro-Nazi propagandists.
Yeah, we had pro-Nazis here trying to persuade people to keep out of the war. People were outraged. They passed the act. The question with the act is whether it's been enforced. It has not been enforced. There have been very few, you can count them on two hands, investigations and indictments over the years. This act is very serious. It's broader than the Lobby Disclosure Act. It requires much more to be disclosed. It's triggered by any person, U.S. citizen, acting as an agent for foreign principal. There's an out. If you're representing a company, you can register under the Lobby Disclosure Act, but a lot of people have not done that either. And these lobbying activities are much broader than the Lobby Disclosure Act in the sense that if you have grassroots, you're paying money to a think tank to do white papers. If you have advertising, everything, including contacting people, you must register. You have to say to the penny how much is being given to you and how much is being spent. Now, there's an exception. If you're a foreign government and you're a diplomat, you don't have to register. And that's a very important thing. So in many cases, all the embassies here are lobbying, but they also turn, especially Japan, Korea, Saudi Arabia, they turn to firms, well-known firms, and they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars on representing their interests before Congress. And I think a lot of people on the Hill don't realize what's going on, and they don't realize that these people have not registered. It's a problem.
Well, but to the question, though, do you think Mueller is going to revive the act?
I think that this scandal is reviving the act, and he has triggered the scandal because he's made it transparent about what people are doing. There are several bills on the Hill that are being considered. The one that's probably going to move the quickest in response to this is one by Grassley that gives more power to the Department of Justice, more money, more authority to pursue people that are breaking the law. And they're going to change this little loophole thing for foreign corporations and put it back with Farah and take it away from the Lobby Disclosure Act. I think it's needed, and I think it will happen. Now, of course, we have an election going on and then a lame duck. So there's lots of other things going on in the lame duck, but it'll probably occur at the beginning of the next Congress when it looks like the Democrats will take over the House.
So does stuff lobbying then fall through the cracks between the Lobby Disclosure Act, which is basically operated by Congress to investigate, and FARA, which is the Justice Department? So does stuff...
I correct you on that. The Lobby Disclosure Act was passed by Congress, and I helped write part of it, but it is enforced by the U.S. District of Columbia's attorneys, and they don't do very well at it. And also, some of it is in the Department of Justice. Congress doesn't enforce it, mm-hmm. and they don't even have good oversight hearings to see what's happening. The GAO, the Government Accountability Office, does audits of it also, and they report problems to Congress, but they haven't done much with it on the Hill.
Well, but does stuff slip through the cracks? In other words, for example,
it's easy to slip through the cracks. We've gone from 14,000 federal registered lobbyists to about 9,000 now. Lots of people are not registering. They're calling themselves strategic advisors or government affairs officials or something, and they're getting around the requirements of the law to register under the LDA. They can't get around it easily with FARA, and that's why a whole lot of people are very worried and down, because they just haven't been registering under FARA, and they should be doing that.
Well, it would seem, though, that countries like Ukraine and Russia, where the lines are blurred between what is a private corporation and what is a government, you know.
Absolutely. And that's one of the big loopholes. And especially, you know, in China also, you don't know what's being run by the government, what's being run by the party, and what is truly a private sector organization.
So given that some of the revelations that have come out of the court filings in the plea deal that Manafort made with Mueller just on the eve of the second trial, where he was going to be nailed for foreign lobbying, wasn't he? That was one of the
Absolutely.
Big charges, right?
They have allowed in the past retroactive compliance by the Department of Justice, and he tried to do that with some of the things that he did, but it was so far back, and there were millions of dollars that's where they nailed him. It's a criminal statute, and he got nailed under it. And this is a major lever on Manafort and Gates to talk about what they did for then-candidate Trump, but what they did for years that was against the law under Farah.
Well, some of the names that have come up in terms of those that it looks as though Manafort sort of tried to get some sort of bipartisan decoration, if you will, for his activities. And one of the mistakes I think that the press keeps making is they talk about Manafort's activities with the Ukrainian government. He was never paid by the Ukrainian government. He was paid by the Russians, you know, to install.
It looks like the money flowed from Russia into accounts in Ukraine and then to him, and then he put it into offshore accounts, and he tried to keep them secret. But yes, he tried to make it bipartisan. He hired Tony Podesta, the Podesta Group, to represent a think tank in Brussels here in Washington, D.C., that would make the president that he was working for then look like he was not corrupt and to help improve the image. He also paid former prime ministers in Poland and one other country in Europe to write op-ed pieces in favor of this guy. So he spread the money that he received internationally, but also in a bipartisan way in the United States. He hired Podesta firm, was a Democratic firm. He hired also Republican firms.
And I think you're referring to Romano Prodi, the former prime minister of Italy.
Yes, that's right. I'm sorry.
No worries, no. But another name that came up, too, in terms of putting some bipartisan decoration on Manafort's lobbying activities, he also hired Tad Devine,
Devine, also a well-known campaign specialist and pretty well respected. He hired him. He got sucked into it.
Right.
But also Vin Weber, a Republican, and others. We don't know all of them for sure because it hasn't been revealed yet.
But Tad Devine was Bernie Sanders' campaign manager.
Right, and he's been in almost every campaign for the last four or five cycles.
Well, is there any chance of a physician heal thyself?
Well, I think that when scandal occurs, there's an effort to have reform, but I think a lot of people begin to look at what they're doing, and they hire outside counsel to look at what they're doing, and they try to change their behavior. There are firms in town, law firms, that do election and also lobbying law, and they come in and they do audits, and they say, hey, you know, you're breaking the law. You've got to change your behavior. So that's already started, especially by the major firms that are very worried about their reputation. You know, it takes 30 years to build a reputation. You've heard it in 5 minutes to lose it. And Tony Podesta knows that well.
So what about the broad issue of lobbying itself? I mean, the word, I believe, comes from the fact that they hang out in the lobby of the Congress, right?
Well, there's a variety of reasons why they call it lobbying. It really goes back to Parliament in the United Kingdom. There's a lobby off the floor where people would stand and try to persuade people. Then there was the lobby of the Willard Hotel during the Lincoln presidency where people would try to lobby. And then there's the lobby off of the House and the Senate floor. So that, you know, you don't need to use any of that, but you should know that, you know, it's the background of it is, there's a variety of reasons for that. Lobbying is absolutely essential, I think, in a representative democracy that's a pluralist democracy where we have First Amendment rights, we have the right to organize, we have the right to hire people to represent our interests. What we need is more transparency about what's going on, and we need enforcement of existing law. if we had enforcement of the existing law, FARA, as well as the Lobby Disclosure Act, there would be lots of things that would change. The main thing that may not change, though, is that we have 8,000-9,000 registered lobbyists. We probably have 100,000 people in the Washington area involved in advocacy, which means coalition building, grassroots, top roots, television production, ads, social media, funneling money to think tanks. Many think tanks are just advocacy tanks. It's a huge business in this town, and people don't know very much about it. We need to know more about it.
But the representatives themselves in the House and the Congress, is there any way for them to know who's lobbying on behalf of a billionaire or a big corporation and who's lobbying on behalf of a grassroots organization? Because there's a phenomenon that's called astroturfing, where you have phony grassroots.
Yeah, fake grassroots.
Yeah.
Fake grassroots is where a firm goes out and they hire people to organize people in a district to then send emails, letters, calls into a member of Congress. And it's really fake in the sense that people don't care that much about it. The organizers from Washington, D.C. are out there doing it. I think it's unethical. It's legal, but it's unethical. And I think that there are many things that are legal but unethical that should be cleaned up. I teach a course on ethics and lobbying. We go through the law, but we also go through the norms. And it's time for more reform.
Well, on that note, we wait with bated breath, and I thank you for joining us, James Thurber.
Sure. Yeah. These are excellent questions, and you really know what you're doing. That's not always the case from people following this story. I'm glad you're doing it.
Well, thank you. And again, I've been speaking with James Thurber, the University Distinguished Professor of Government and founder and former director of the Center for Congressional and Presidential Studies at American University in Washington, D.C. He's the author of numerous books and more than 80 articles and chapters on Congress, interest groups, and lobbying and campaigns and elections. And his latest book is Congress and Diaspora Politics, The Influence of Ethnic and Foreign Lobbying. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasts at backgroundbriefing.org. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.